From NPR and WBUR, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. President Trump is responding to the shooting at the Capital Gazette in Annapolis, Maryland, saying journalists like all Americans should be free from the fear of being violently attacked while doing their jobs. Five people at the paper were killed. The suspect has been identified as 38-year-old Jared Ramos, who had a longstanding dispute with the paper for its coverage of his conviction in a criminal harassment case in 2011. The gunman had reportedly sued the paper. That failed. He'd been harassing reporters online.
So let's bring in NPR media correspondent David Fogenflick. Hi, David.
Hey, guys.
Oh, we're going to be talking more about how this has been politicized, this story. But first, your initial thoughts. This was a disgruntled reader, somebody who'd been a subject of the paper, but it just, it's a gut punch to many. Your thoughts?
Look, the Annapolis Capital was a paper I competed against. I was worked for over a decade at the Baltimore Sun, and it was a good local paper. I knew the family that used to own it. It is a complete gut punch to journalists, I think, in Maryland in particular, to obviously the friends and family of those who've died. You know, the paper like the Capital, understaffed, underpaid. They did their best. They worked really hard. They told important stories. I got to be honest, it's a very hard story for me. One of them was a good friend of mine at the Baltimore Sun for many years. And these were just marvelous people. And I think about, you know, their family members and what we've lost.
Who was that was your friend? And we should name them. Wendy Winters, Rebecca Smith, Robert Hyacin, Carl Hyacin's brother, the author Carl Hyacin, Gerald Fishman, John McNamara.
So Rob Hyacin sat next to me or a few desks from me, I should say, for a number of years. He was this big looming guy who couldn't have been more ebullient, always with a quick quip, very funny, but yet interested in teasing out the humanity in stories and in people. And over the years, really emerged as a mentor to not even just his younger colleagues, although that was certainly the case, but to other colleagues where he wanted to engage and just question, why did we make the choices we did? Was there another way to do it? Were there things we were overlooking? Mm-hmm. And really a thoughtful, thoughtful and yet hilarious guy. Great. You know, I described him last night as a Labrador. He just was this bounding figure in the newsroom. And I you know, I just think about his wife, Maria, and his daughters.
She was also a journalist.
Yeah. Originally, yes.
David, we had a moment of silence actually this morning right here in our newsroom. I'm sure many newsrooms did. You know, people were watching this unfold in real time, and there were calls for help from within the newsroom at the Capital Gazette. Let's listen here to an intern there, Anthony Messenger, who spoke on NBC's Today Show this morning.
It was chaos. The office was kind of in shambles. Unfortunately, we had to pass two bodies of our colleagues, which was something that nobody should ever have to stomach. Just unfortunate that somebody would come into a place that only reports truthful stories that are fact-based and unleash hell on the office. We tried to keep our eyes from off of the ground, but inevitably we all, as journalists, were kind of curious, and it was sickening.
David, there's police presence today at many newsrooms out of precaution. How do you think news organizations are going to have to think about security now?
You know, I think news organizations have been thinking about security. You know, one of the untold stories not emphasized publicly is the degree to which reporters and newsroom leaders face harassment on a not infrequent basis on the virtue of the fact that they're publishing things that may upset people, that may be about people, they may take issue with. Certainly this shooter is said to have filed a suit and really harassed journalists there for many years. But yes, you know, there were security guards and police officers fanning out to newsrooms and not just in Central Maryland yesterday as a result of this, because of the concerns of copycat and because of the concerns about the nature of rhetoric against journalists. You know, let's acknowledge, as we have had to, there have been shootings at numerous schools at,
right.
You know,
churches.
I'm in Denver at the moment, you know, nearby in Aurora, Colorado at a movie theater, you know, at the Orlando Pulse nightclub. But there is a current conversation happening about the media that is not only antagonistic to the coverage that we provide as journalists, but to the journalists as people. And I think it comes often in the last couple of years from the top, from the president. And while there's no way in which one can at this time show there's any evidence of any direct correlation, I think we should underscore that very clearly. I think it is a problematic element right now that you know, the way in which the president speaks.
Well, the president has called the press the enemy of the people. He's called it fake news. He's encouraged people at campaigns when he was a candidate to, he's pointed out and encouraged people to boo them.
Well, and actually, I saw one journalist tweet today, I never want to see the term or hear the term fake news ever again.
Sure.
Well, and then you had this week as well, the far-right provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos, who sent out a message to reporters on Tuesday. I can't wait. He was in a spat with some reporters, and he wrote, I can't wait for the vigilante squads to start gunning journalists down on sight. Of course, this was on Tuesday before the shooting. He since said that was a joke, but it doesn't come across as a joke. And then you also had Sean Hannity of Fox News yesterday on his radio show. He lamented the shooting, but then he said this.
I've been saying now for days that something horrible is going to happen because of the rhetoric. Really, Maxine, you want people to create, call your friends, get in their faces, and Obama said that too, get in their faces, call them out, call your friends, you know, get protesters, follow them into restaurants and shopping malls and wherever else, she said.
So David Folkenflik, there you have him calling out Maxine Waters, who called on protesters to harass Trump officials.
Let's offer some true news there. What he's saying about Obama, I just don't think there's any... there's anything he can hang his hat on. I don't think there's actually what he's saying about Maxine Waters is a distortion of what she had to say. But let's talk a little bit about President Trump and candidate Trump's rhetoric. Enemy of the people is suggesting that journalists are traitors. What we do know that he's doing from talking to news executives at major news organizations here and elsewhere and human rights activists is he's providing cover for authoritarian figures like Duterte in the Philippines, the leader of Turkey, the Putin regime in Russia, to act at times with impunity against journalists. The United States is not able convincingly to act as a spokesman for freedom of expression and the human rights of journalists, serving on behalf of informing the people who live in their countries, when you have rhetoric from the top accusing journalists of being among the most serious problems that America has and of being enemies of the people. And that is rhetoric that the president owns. So while there is no evidence, I want to underscore again, to connect what the president has said with what occurred in Annapolis, you know, this is a moment where I think people need to think really seriously about the ways in which they rhetorically target journalists who are just going about, by and large, the best they can to help people make sense of the communities and the world in which they live.
So, David, you mentioned Bill Shine there. He has apparently been chosen to lead the White House communications team. He comes from Fox News. What should we know about him?
Well, there are a couple of things you should know about him. He actually knew Sean Hannity when both of them, and was friends with him when both of them were in talk radio days prior to Fox News. He was one of Roger Ailes, the late Roger Ailes' top deputies at Fox. Shine was not as tough a person as Ailes, but was seen as a facilitator and enforcer of what Ailes wanted on the air, including, according to allegations in numerous lawsuits from women who used to work at Fox News, facilitating and enabling Ailes in what has been routinely and convincingly described as predatory behavior towards women when Ailes was the CEO and chairman there. Ailes, of course, was forced out in 2016. Shine ultimately had to leave the next year, last year, as a result of there basically being a collapse of faith in him as an honest broker by particularly women at the network. But one of the things he's going to bring to the president is an exquisitely tuned sense of what his core base, which is closely aligned to the core viewing base of Fox News, what his core base finds alienating and what they find turn them on, because he's watched minute-by-minute ratings. So that is what Bill Shine is going to do as Trump hopes to hold on to his base amid these, increasingly expanding investigations of his circle and his activities. And also, as he gears up in his, for a re-election campaign in 2020, that's who Bill Shine is.
Look, NPR's David Folkenflik, on a week when the, the press was attacked, I'm going to ask a question regarding criticism of the press, but it's the press still, wanting to keep itself to the highest standard. So just asking you briefly about former New York Times executive editor Jill Abramson tweeted her disappointment about the Times coverage of that young woman in New York who upset a longtime lawmaker, saying the paper underestimated her, and it just the way they underestimated Trump in the 2016 elections. Do you think she's right that the Times and other outlets are too insulated and not looking for the non-mainstream candidates?
Look, you know, I'm a huge fan as a reader and as a journalist of so much that the New York Times does. But this was a pretty big blind spot in its backyard. I think that newspapers often take their cues from the politicians themselves. Joe Crowley, the congressman who lost his primary there, seemed unconcerned. He sent a surrogate to a debate with her. He seemed to sort of be rather cavalier about his prospects and didn't realize until late along that he was in real trouble. And the Times may well have taken its cues from that. But, you know, I think that it is a reminder that even as the news organizations have been flagellating themselves about Trump voters again and again, and, you know, it's important that those voices be captured and reflected. Nonetheless, they seem to be missing almost every other, you know, element of ways in which the political scene and voters' concerns are morphing as well.
Yeah.
It's NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik. David, thank you so much.
You bet.